Okay, we are going to start the Sutta teaching session. So, first of all, we pay homage to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Dear friends in Dhamma, so we were discussing Yamaka Sutta. Is available in the Kanda Samyutta, and as you can remember, in one occasion, Venerable Yamaka started establishing himself in a wrong view, and that is called after the death, the Arahant completely annihilated, completely destroyed, and it appears like correct, and he strongly adhered to that, and then started spreading his news that he has this kind of a view, and the other monks understood the kind of the glitch in it, the kind of wrong in it, the error in it, and they approached Venerable Yamaka and tried to correct him, tried to convince him, but they were not successful. And then they approached Venerable Sariputta and asked him to approach Venerable Yamaka and try to convince him in the proper Dhamma. So then on one occasion, Venerable Sariputta approached Venerable Yamaka and asked whether you are having this kind of a view after the death of this Arahant, that the Arahant will completely destroyed, annihilated and perishes with the breakup of the body and does not exist. Now, for us also, it appears like correct, but when we properly understand the Dhamma, so that is what Venerable Sariputta trying to convince, trying to deliver to this Yamaka, what is the wrong, what is the error in this view. So there are Venerable Sariputta actually immediately, rather than approaching directly to this particular problem, so he actually try to establish Yamaka's understanding in the proper view, in the correct view. So this very view that Venerable Yamaka is having is because of some wrong view. That wrong view is fairly strongly adhered in his mind. But now Venerable Sariputta is trying to inform him, teach him what is the wrong in his view. So there he asks a series of questions, and those series of questions are really based on the practice. Rather than trying to give a philosophical, logical, theoretical meaning, understanding, now Venerable Sariputta directly refer his meditative practice, the practical approach he is asking. So this same thing has happened in other suttas, like Mahatanha Sanghe Sutta. When one venerable called Sati was having wrong view, the Buddha also asked a series of questions from many other monks, and when they are properly answering, interrupting them, Buddha asks whether are you answering out of respect to me or since you have heard about it. And then those monks actually answer, it is not because of the respect, it is not because that we merely heard about it, rather we have seen it for ourselves. We directly have seen for ourselves. So that is why we are answering like this. Now here also we can see the same situation where Venerable Yamaka, when asking series of questions, what do you think, friend Yamaka? Is form permanent or impermanent? So about the form, the aggregate form. So when Venerable Sariputta asked, so he is answering as impermanent. So this is not merely through hearing, rather he seems to have practiced a lot, but unfortunately in between he get into a wrong view. So this is a kind of possible scenario where monks and other spiritual practitioners, they are closely pondering on certain matters, and that can lead to a wrong view as well. On such situation they have to be very really humble, receptive, and able to discuss with another person, have to have a kind of an open mind. So those are extremely necessary, otherwise we can get into wrong view and could even adhere to that, and ultimately we completely get distracted from the Buddha's teaching. So here Venerable Sariputta asks about the five aggregates, whether form aggregate is permanent or impermanent, feelings aggregate permanent or impermanent, perceptions aggregate permanent or impermanent, formations aggregate or volitional formations permanent or impermanent, and the consciousness aggregate permanent or impermanent. Now this is with respect to the five aggregates, and to each question Venerable Yamaka answers that those are impermanent. And when Sariputta further asks, is what is impermanent, suffering or happiness? And then Venerable Yamaka answers, it is suffering. And is what is impermanent, suffering and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this is I am, this is myself, no Venerable Sir. Now slowly Venerable Sariputta is able to convince Venerable Yamaka that if something is impermanent, so there can't be lasting happiness. So things are always becoming otherwise, and as a result of that, at one day, at one occasion, what you consider as happy, what you consider as pleasurable, can change to complete opposite. On such occasion, you can't say it is happiness, it is satisfaction, rather it becomes suffering. So therefore, if something is impermanent, as a result of that, it becomes automatically suffering, unsatisfactory. And on such cases, the situation, there is no point of considering this form, feelings, perceptions, formations and consciousness as me, myself, because the very notion of considering those as me, myself, is the thing that we think everything can be under my control. So this is mine because it belongs to me and it is completely under my control. This is my car, so I can take it wherever I like, and I can change its color, or I can fix various other components, and that is my car. So my car, that indicates that kind of an authority, kind of a controllability, governability, and that is the sort of underlying understanding. So, and even there we can understand, okay, even though it is my car, so someone can even steal it, someone can even harm it, or it can get burnt, it can get destroyed, it can meet with an accident, and it naturally get decayed. So all these things are inevitable. But still we ignorantly consider it is my car. So similarly, if we consider our body, perceptions, feelings, etc., even though we consider as me, myself, so they are under constant change. Now, after Venerable Yamaka answers like that, there are a few more other questions. So when a particular yogi understands these five aggregates as impermanent, suffering and non-self, so that's the stage, so his vipassana knowledges are growing. So as they are growing further and further, so that very understanding causes for him to detach from everything. So rather than grasping, rather than clinging to them, now he is slowly abandoning them, slowly letting them go. It is not kind of a forceful abandonment, rather it's a natural letting go process, because he understood things are impermanent. He understood things are suffering. He understood things are non-self. So what doesn't belong to me, so why should I keep them with me? So I can simply let them go. So that's kind of a relaxed awareness, that kind of a relaxed freedom is something that slowly this yogi is appreciating. So the same thing happening. And here now Venerable Sariputta get into the next section, that is with respect to an arahant. So with respect to an arahant, he is asking, what do you think, friend Yamaka? Do you regard form as a tathagata? Now he is asking, when we are considering an arahant, is there form, the form aggregate you consider as the arahant? Then he says no. So is the feeling aggregate you consider as the arahant? Is the perceptions aggregate do you consider as the arahant? Is the formations aggregate do you consider as the arahant? or the consciousness aggregate do you consider as the Arahant? And to all these questions, Venerable Yamaka answers as no. And now there are various ways of communicating, grammatical representations. So when we are referring ourselves, when we are referring another person, when we are referring a particular place or whatever a belonging, so we have some sort of referring them with respect to our possessiveness, with respect to our detachment, or how we are having a kind of a relationship with it. So in order to communicate that, actually we have built up grammar, we have built up languages, what we call as the inflections, using different types of inflections, so we can communicate with the other person. This is my house. So then it indicates that it has a kind of a possessiveness in the statement. So I am at home, or I am in house. So that indicates that where I am and how now I am associating the house. Sometimes we can say, so I have abandoned house. So you can say, okay, that's another relationship that we are communicating. So I have mortgaged the house. So now we have another relationship. And say, I lost my house. Or I'm in my house. I have gone away from my house. So I'm really happy with my house because I spent a fair amount of money and time and everything happened smoothly. So I'm quite happy with my house. Or my house requires certain repairs. So with respect to a house, so we can communicate with another person many different ways of grammatical and language related and relationship related information. So in order to do this successfully, we are having various grammatical representations. And when and here Venerable Sariputta is asking certain questions from Yamaka regarding that. Because what happened is, when we start using this grammar, using these languages, in order to communicate, ultimately without our knowledge even, so that those are becoming very strong, and we start adhering to them strongly, and again, we think that they are available. We think that they are permanent. The way we communicate become the way we think. And the way we think become what we believe or what we trust and what we accept and what we strongly believe, what we strongly adhere to. It's a kind of a process. So when we consider various perceptions, so they appear like very innocent, very feeble, weak states at the beginning. But the more we associate them, the more we communicate with them, and more we talk about them, and more we prepare various other notions, languages, words, statements, grammar with them, ultimately they become stronger and stronger, and our mind becomes entangled, and our whole thinking process becomes entangled, fixed, and ultimately we come to wrong conclusions, wrong views. Now, So here actually we can relate this questioning with respect to Mula Pariyaya Sutta also. We that already discussed Mula Pariyaya Sutta some time back in the Sutta teaching session. So that is the very first Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya, where Buddha gave certain 24 examples and many different inflections how one can wrongly, erroneously adhere to them. For example, an undisciplined worldling, so he perceives earth as earth, and having perceived earth as earth, he conceives himself as earth. So for example, say, suppose that you are seeing a photograph, and when you see your photograph, you say, okay, this is I am. So this was I a month ago, this was I with my friend a month ago. So immediately we attribute a person, we attribute a self, we attribute an individual to that sight, that particular photograph, And now we can conceive about it, how we were there and how we were playing, how we were enjoying, and what was the time. And now you get various memories about that occasion, memories about that person who is accompanying you, and all sorts of other information starts popping up in your mind. Now you are conceiving. That is a person, and with respect to that person, okay, this was the situation, and these are the other people who have associated. So this person. So Sakkaya Ditti based thinking. Personality view based thinking. Conceiving, going on. So it can happen in many different ways. So Buddha also explains that in detail in this Mulapariyaya Sutta. Because we haven't understood it. So that's why Buddha mentioned. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. So this worlding don't have a thorough understanding about what's really going on. He simply adhere to various conventions, and that is how he is referring. And that is how he is communicating with others, and that is what he is going to believe. Strongly believe it. Because he don't understand. And then actually with respect to a seeker, a trainee, Buddha mentioned that he has some thorough understanding, some experiential knowledge. So whenever mind tries to conceive, whenever mind tries to proliferate, whenever mind tries to sort of distract, establish on wrong view, so at that moment he gave a kind of a reminder to himself, don't do it. Don't conceive like this. Don't proliferate like this. So you have already seen. During your session of meditation, during your contemplation, during your practice, you have properly seen, it is not me, it is not myself, it is not I am. So basically, it is not that we, every moment that we are doing some, say, thorough, deep investigation, but what happened is, during our practice, we may incorporate such deep investigation, and as a result of that, mind also get released. It is not mere deep investigation. So we have to continue deep investigation, continuous investigation for a long time. As a result of that, the knowledge is growing, and when knowledge is growing, it can come to a kind of a breakthrough where the mind get released. But unfortunately, this release state we are still unable to maintain. So as a result of that, again we go and attach. On such occasion, if we can remember it, if we can refer to that, if we can remind the mind, okay, haven't you seen that? Haven't you seen that release? Haven't you seen that there is no self here? Haven't you seen that things are impermanent? So it's a kind of a reminder to the mind. So once we are fairly consolidating that release state, so this very reminder would be sufficient for the mind to let go of that. So assume that the mind got attached to something, grasped something, and you were able to notice it because of the mindfulness. And when mindfulness indicates that again the mind has attached, so you can reflect about your understanding, what you have gained through your vipassana practice. And that understanding may be capable of cutting off that attachment, cutting off that grasping, and again taking back the mind to the release state. So this is somewhat highlighted in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, where Buddha again and again mentioned, okay, you got to maintain your mind in the release state. It is quite equanimous, it is not so pleasurable, or it is not sort of sorrowful, rather it is very, very equanimous. But it is sublime. It is fairly mature. It is not excited. It's very much like your borderline, kind of your baseline of the mind. That is your reference line of the mind. So try to keep it there. So don't allow mind to get fluctuated, mind to get excited, mind to get oscillated again and again. So if it get oscillated, if it get fluctuated, come back to the middle, come back to your baseline, as quickly as possible and maintain that. So you are very much like Buddha is directing us to maintain that release state, maintain that equanimous state, unconditioned state or less conditioned state as much as possible. Now, a further series of questions or rather statements Venerable Sariputta is asking from Yamaka, and he is for many different ways, various combinations. Now he is asking from Venerable Yamaka. What do you think, friend Yamaka? Do you regard form, feeling, perception, volitional formulation and consciousness taken together as a Tathagata? Now, we understand, okay, when we take individually, form aggregate, it is not me, myself, or I am. When we consider feeling aggregate, still it is no me, myself, I am. When we take perceptions, when we take formations, when we take consciousness individually, we can recognize, okay, it is not me, it is not myself, it is not I am. But unfortunately, when we take things together, when all of them, all five aggregates are working together, so then we feel like that's a person, that is an individual. So that is actually deeply rooted a defilement. So that is also discussed in what we call the Kemaka Sutta. Yeah, Venerable Kemaka very interestingly explained that using a simile. He says, if you consider a flower, and it is having kind of a pleasant fragrant, and if one says this fragrant coming from the petals, is he telling the truth? Then the others explain or answers as no. So if someone says this fragrance coming from leaves, is he telling the truth? No. So likewise, he is individually, he is saying that the fragrance is not coming from petals, not coming from this leaves, not coming from another part. But still fragrance is coming. And how are we going to refer it? Then one can simply say, okay, fragrance is coming from the flower. So similarly, there is a possibility, even though we understand individually, these aggregates are not me, myself or I am, but still one may feel as I am, one may feel as a self. One may have a sense of self. So that is called asmimana. The I am. The conceit I am. So that is a deeply rooted, very subtle conceit. So Venerable Kemaka mentioned there, asmiti mano, asmiti chando, asmiti anusayo. So again and again we were thinking, we were referring, we were, you know, communicating with others many, many lifetimes. There is a person, there is I am, and I am so and so. So I am communicating with others. And so as a result of that, so it has become a latent tendency in the mind. It is latent and again it's a tendency. It's a habit. Even though we understand, even practically, things are impermanent, things are not suffering, things are not self. So still that tendency is still operating. So in order to remove that tendency, it takes long time. That's why the practice becomes a little harder. We may already understood it, we may already seen the release, but still we may feel the sense of I, sense of I am, sense of myself. Because of this conceit I am, the desire to I am, and for this latent tendency, I am. Asmiti mano, asmiti chando, asmiti anusayo. Now, Venerable Sariputta is anyway asking a further series of questions from Venerable Yamaka, and he is now asking, are you regarding Tathagata, the Arahant, as one who is without form, without feeling, without perception, without volitional formation, without consciousness? So then he answers as no. So outside the aggregates, are you referring Tathagata? So basically when we are considering the five aggregates, so when we are enhancing it, enveloping using the five definitions of five aggregates. So there is nothing beyond that. Apart from Nibbana, which is unconditioned, according to the Dhamma, and so the when we are referring five aggregates, so everything is included there. Whatever is physical are included in the form aggregate. Whatever feelings included in the feeling aggregate. Whatever type of perceptions included in the perceptions aggregate. Whatever kind of formations included in the formations aggregate. Whatever kind of consciousness, the conditioned consciousness included in the consciousness aggregate. So there is nothing out of that. Whatever is conditioned are all included in this five aggregates. And they are subjected to clinging. Now, when Venerable Sariputta asked from Yamaka, Venerable Yamaka, are you referring the Arahant outside these aggregates? Then he understand, okay, I can't do like that. So all whatever physical, all whatever tangible are coming under the five aggregates, so I can't define an Arahant out of that. So now Venerable Sariputta showing the error, showing the mistake in the view of Venerable Yamaka. But friend, when the Tathagata is not apprehended by you as real and actual here in this very life. Now this is very, very important statement. That is where we all go wrong. When the Tathagata is not apprehended, not available by you as real and actual here in this very life, is it fitting for you to declare, as I understand the Dhamma, taught by the Blessed One, a bhikkhu whose stains are destroyed is annihilated and perishes with the breakup of the body and does not exist after death? Now here we can say, even while living, even in this very life, even right now, there is no person, there is no Arahant. So it's a mere communication, it's a mere name, it's a mere label, it's a mere convention. But we are using it to refer, to distinguish, that's all. There is no any Arahant who is substantial, who has a tangible form or tangible perception, tangible this and that. But altogether we give a name, okay, so he is so and so, he is Venerable Sariputta, he is Venerable Moggallana, he is Venerable Kassapa, and he is the Buddha. So even to the Buddha. Now interestingly, so that's another occasion where Buddha gave the same discourse to Venerable Anuradha. That also I have referred here. So also in the Sangyutta Nikaya, where Buddha explained to Venerable Anuradha the same thing. But Anuradha, when the Tathagata is not apprehended by you as real and actual here in this very life, is it fitting for you to declare? Friends, when a Tathagata is describing a Tathagata, the highest type of person, the supreme person, the attainer of the supreme attainment, he describes him apart from these four cases. The Tathagata exists after death, or Tathagata does not exist after death, Tathagata exists and does not exist after the death, and Tathagata neither exists nor none exists after the death. And so these are the four ways of declaring a Tathagata, possibilities for a Tathagata, and Buddha mentioned, so even right now there is no Tathagata, then what are you talking? So then Buddha further highlight when Venerable Anuradha answers, no Venerable Sir, so Buddha further highlights, good Anuradha. Formerly Anuradha and also now, I make known just suffering and the cessation of suffering. That's all. So you can see Buddha again and again highlighted, it is not a person coming and going, it is not a person arising and passing away. It is mere suffering. But altogether, when these aggregates are working together for our easy reference, we give a name to it. Okay, he is an Arahant. He is the Buddha. He is Venerable Sariputta. He is Venerable Moggallana. He is Venerable Kassapa. So all these are mere reflections, or all these are mere references. All these are mere conventions. Now, this is very interestingly highlighted in certain other sutta, what we call in Vajra Sutta. In one occasion, you know, the evil one, the Mara, approached Venerable Vajra, Bhikkhuni Arahant Vajra, and he is asking, by whom has this being created? Now here being, so this individual, by whom? Who is the creator? Who is the creator? Who created this being? Where is the maker of this being? Who is the maker? Who is the creator? Where has the being arisen? So, where this being, the person, the individual, Satta, arisen? Where does the being cease? So the very understanding, the wrong understanding is that there is a being, there is a person, there is an individual, there is an ongoing soul, there is an ongoing self. So that's the wrong understanding continuously carried on in all these questions. So that wrong understanding is fairly deeply rooted in our minds. So even we are asking questions while keeping this deeply rooted self view within us. So that's the problem. So it took long time to Venerable Sariputta and even to the Buddha to convince the other person that there is no such thing. Even right now there is no person. Even right now there is no Buddha. Even right now there is no Tathagata. Even right now there is no Arahant. So it's a mere convention. It's a mere name. It's a mere label. And when this question was asked by the Mara, so Venerable Bhikkhuni Vajra answers, this puppet is not made by itself, nor is this misery made by another. It has come to be dependent on a cause. With the causes break up, it will cease. So there are certain causes available, and those causes are also impermanent. And as a result of that, the result also impermanent. As when a seed is sown in a field, it grows depending on a pair of factors. It requires both the soil's nutrients and a steady supply of moisture. Now you know, when you are planting a seed, so seed itself has some potential, but it alone is not enough for it to grow. So it requires a certain amount of moisture, water, it requires a certain amount of fertilizer, nutrients coming from the soil. So when everything is available, now the tree is growing. So everything is so dependent. So tree is a conditioned phenomena. And for it to grow, so we need certain conditions, we need certain causes to fulfill. A seed is a certain phenomena, it also has certain potential, but we need certain other causes, conditions, supporting conditions for it to grow as a plant and then as a tree. So it requires both, so just so the aggregates and elements and these six bases of sensory contact have come to be dependent on a cause. With the causes break up, they will cease. And so when these causes break up, everything ceases. And in certain other sutta, say this, I think this in when Vajra Sutta, so she explains, so when these aggregates and what you call phenomena comes together, we give a name, like we are giving a name, a reference as cart. when wheels are there, when the other components are there, when we fix them together, assemble them together in a particular proper way, then we give a name as a car. In today's term, okay, as a bus, as a van, as a car. So after we combine things together and assemble them in a proper order, now we give a name so that we can distinguish, because there are many, many vehicles available. So we want to distinguish, it's a car. Suppose that you are going to insure your vehicle. So the insurance amount, installment may be different from vehicle to vehicle. Now you need to refer whether it is a car or whether it is a van or whether it is a bus or whether it's a jeep. Or so different forms are available. So now you need to refer, distinctly recognize. So now you need a name. So we are giving a name. We are adding a name, sticking a label. But unfortunately, so that label become a truth. The label becomes something that we strongly adhere. And we think that label represents something substantial. Or label itself has something substantial. And here in this human realm, okay, there are many, many people available, human beings available. Now we need to individually recognize them. Now we take a picture and put a number to it. And then we give a identity card number, social reference number, or passport number, so that we can distinctly recognize. But unfortunately, all these conventions, easy references, become something that we strongly believe, something that we strongly adhere, and then the label become something substantial. It becomes something that we strongly fixed ourselves. And we think, okay, now I am available. So and so is available. So and so is living. So and so is permanent. Now after actually all these explanations were given, now Venerable Yamaka understood. The problem in his wrong view, and then Venerable Sariputta asked the question. So Venerable Yamaka says, formerly, friend Sariputta, when I was ignorant, I did hold that pernicious view, but now that I have heard this Dhamma teaching of the Venerable Sariputta, I have abandoned the pernicious view and have made the breakthrough to the Dhamma. Now you can see, because of this discussion, Venerable Yamaka was able to abandon the pernicious view. And not only that, he realized Dhamma. And he was able to arrive to Dhamma. He was able to arrive or discover the truth. Actually, he seems to be a good practitioner. Unfortunately, in between, he has gone to a wrong track, he has gone to a wrong view. But as a result of the discussion had with Venerable Sariputta, and he was able to again take his understanding to the proper track. And as a result of that, what happened? He has made a breakthrough to his practice. In other terms, he has become a Sotapanna. Now Venerable Sariputta wants to confirm. Now he is asking another question. If friend Yamaka, they were to ask you, friend Yamaka, when a bhikkhu is an arahant, one whose stains are destroyed, what happens to him with the breakup of the body after death? Now Venerable Sariputta put the question to Yamaka. And then Venerable Yamaka says, if they were to ask me this, friend, I would answer thus. Friend, form is impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering has ceased and passed away. There is no name as an arahant, but form is impermanent. Feelings impermanent, perceptions impermanent, formations impermanent, consciousness impermanent, and all things come together. Actually, we have given a name. That's a different story. So So all these constituent parts are impermanent. They are unsatisfactory. They are not self. So how we would say what is impermanent puts together, are we going to build a permanent thing? So it's impossible. So therefore, this Venerable Yamaka now answer correctly. So all these five aggregates are impermanent, suffering, non-self, and those have arisen and those have ceased. It is not an arahant was available and then arahant has ceased, perished, destroyed, annihilated. Rather, an ongoing arising and passing away process was available with respect to the form, with respect to the feelings, with respect to the perceptions, with respect to the formations, with respect to the consciousness, and they are all interdependent, they are all dependent on so many other, say, conditions, and it's a kind of a process going on. But when the satisfactory causes, conditions are abandoned, not allowed or not supplied, this very process ceased. That's all. Now we can actually take another Buddha's reference to Vachagotta. So there Buddha mentioned with a simile, Agi Vachagotta Sutta. So assume that there is a fire, and this fire burns because of, we can say, the continuous supply of oxygen, because of the continuous supply of fuel. Maybe you ask again and again, adding wood and maybe various other fuel. Now the fire is burning. It's an ongoing process because you are continuously supplying the necessary causes. But assume that you remove the firewood and you extinguish them. Now slowly, slowly, fire extinguish. So what are we going to tell about the fire now? So once the fire extinguished, can we say that there was fire, these flames, and they have gone to a particular direction? Or they are reborn, they have gone to this direction, they have gone to that direction. Or we can simply would say, okay, fire has ceased because the conditions are no more. It's a continuous process going on. It's a mere condition process happened because of the unavailability of those conditions, causes. Now the resultant has ceased. Resultant is not a self. Resultant is a condition process. Momentarily arising and passing away. Momentarily arising and passing away. So the problem is, because of this continuity, we are incapable of understanding its impermanence. We think fire is available as a permanent entity. But the fire is burning as a result of continuous supply of a little bit of fuel, a little bit of oxygen. And now that too comes together and then burn. Again, at the next moment, another little bit of oxygen, another little bit of fuel, that too comes together, burn. Next moment, another little bit of oxygen, another little bit of fuel, that too comes together, burn. It's a kind of a continuity going on. But incapable of understanding the continuity, so we take the whole process as something, as fire, as an entity, and then we get caught up. So same thing happens into us. So these five aggregates are dependent. So form aggregate dependent. So we need to supply fuel. We need to supply food as the fuel for this form aggregate. So depending in that, the form aggregate arising and passing away, arising and passing away, arising and passing away. So the feelings, so that also is dependent. So the contact has to again and again happen. When contact happens, feelings arise and pass away. Another contact happened and says, feeling arise and pass away. Another contact happened and sees, feeling arise and pass away. It's a continuous process, dependent process. Okay, perceptions. A contact happened, perception arrive. Contact ceases, perception ceases. Another contact happened, perception arrives. Contact ceases, perception ceases. Another condition process. Formations. Another contact happened, formation arise. Contact ceases, formation ceases. Contact happen, formation arise. Contact ceases, formation ceases. Another condition process. Okay, the consciousness aggregate. Name and form happen, consciousness happen, arise. Name and form cease, consciousness cease. Another name and form happen, consciousness is entangled, arise. And name and form cease, consciousness also cease. Another dependent process. So all these five aggregates are, we can say, dependently arisen processes. They all work together, and we have given a name. That name doesn't represent anything in a way, that is a mere representation. So at the end of the death, it's a mere availability of those causes have ceased. So the process has stopped. There was no person to go to another place. There is no person to cease. There is no person, an entity, an individual to annihilate. But these processes have stopped. These processes have ceased. Because the necessary conditions are not available. So this is the understanding now slowly. Venerable Sariputta is trying to inculcate in the Venerable Yamaka's mind, and he understood that, and I think with that we can conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now I can get into questions.
If there are any questions, feel free to raise your hand or you can also send them via the chat. Okay, I'd like to invite Mahesh.
Well, thanks, Jennifer. I'll try my best. Related to the talk we just finished, and reflecting from yesterday's discussion, I was listening to the Nivanilima discussion, and what I actually got in my mind is, so from the practice we train just to stay still, and so even though we are staying still, just looking at what's happening, even though things comes up sometimes, generating from nowhere, things appear maybe because of the past deeds we were involved, or even though sometimes it's nothing related, but sometimes things comes, like we call it thoughts. And so what I used to do, together with the instructions that I have received, is to watch them, and when we watch them, it passes away. So if I'm talking about what I heard from yesterday, that Bhante Dhammaji was saying, let them come, watch them, don't force them to go, just watch them, what's happening, watching and watching and watching, and not to entangle with them, not to, if you're staying still, you will not respond, of course. And then I relate that point into my previous learning of, yes, we try to do as much as possible throughout our life, during day Anytime, if you can come to the stay still position and keep watching, and then let whatever comes. If they go, they go. If they stay, they stay. But we don't get involved. So then coming in back to the today's point that you highlighted, when we are in that, and then it's like we are not going to give fuel. So if you're not going to give fuel, then it's nothing. So things will stay as it is. Because we are not providing any fuel, there's nothing going to be generated. And even there are some substance like anushya, kilesa or whatever comes up because they were things that we entangled and we sankara we created before, and they come and we just keep ignoring them and just, you know, we see that they are coming but they stay. We don't fool them, we don't add things to that, we don't proliferate, so they stay and they stay and they stay and they stay. So that's what the understanding I have got, that we need to be keep going with that state, and we have to improve the time duration that we can keep ourselves in that. Sometimes because of the outside reasons like a sound or a any kind of disturbance can happen, but still if we can redirect ourselves back to that state, that's what we have to do as yogis. Not only during the sitting, not only during the walking, but in our day-to-day lives as much as possible. That's my understanding, what I have got from all this recollecting every bits and pieces that I have grasped from the talks. I just want to say that, please correct me if I'm wrong, but thank you.
Yeah, correct. So basically, actually, we can say there are different stages into this practice. So once you recognize this non-grasping state, so as you correctly mentioned, it's a matter of consolidating that non-grasping state. It's a matter of being in that non-grasping state, familiarizing in that non-grasping state. And while you are there, so there are various things can come, various things can arise. So you are not forcefully trying to abandon them. You are not forcefully trying to let them go. But they, now you understood, they have their very nature to come and go. So it's one of their characteristics. Whatever is conditioned are subjected to cease. So that is their very characteristics. So we are not trying to impose anything onto them. So rather we simply wait till they pass away. And immediately they may pass away. Assume that there is a thought coming to your mind, and if you already seen that thought has the nature to arise and pass away, the nature to appear and disappear, then it is not your duty to make it disappear. Rather, you can simply wait, you can simply observe. From your side, as you correctly mentioned, important thing is that you are not contributing to it. You are not sort of trying to manipulate it. You are not trying to change it. You are not trying to add to it. You are not trying to proliferate on it. You are not trying to construct onto it. So you simply keep yourself detached from the process. But you are not ignorant. You are fully vigilant. And now you may see it is passing away. Because it has its very nature, very characteristic as passing away. If it happens, it passes away. Whatever is suffering, it is going to cease. And as Buddha mentioned, all what is happening is arising of a suffering and arising, passing away of that very suffering. That's all. Now, if we continue like that, as you mentioned, so we are not fertilizing or we are not fueling the inner tendencies, latent tendencies. Actually, latent tendencies were very much grown because of our wrong practice. Suppose when a lustful thought arisen, so we start contributing to it. We start thinking about it. We start adding a person to it. We start manipulating it. We start proliferating onto it. And then we, as a result of that wrong understanding, entanglement, now we are growing lust. We become lustful. The mind becomes lustful. And now we go to a that particular person and we start touching and kissing and all these things. So again and again this lustful process becomes stronger and stronger. So that very process becomes deeply rooted in ourselves because of this wrong way of practice. So lust has become deeply rooted in the mind now. But now as practitioners, what one would do, a lustful thought arises and he is maintaining a detached atmosphere within the mind, and as a result of the developed mindfulness, he was able to recognize this lustful thought at its early stage, and now he takes care of not to contribute to it, not to get entangled to it, not to fuel it, not to construct onto it, not to proliferate. He simply waits for that to behave as it wants, because it has the very nature to pass away. If I am not contributing to it, I am not changing it, I am not supporting it, I am not getting deluded by that. So that very lustful thought has the nature to cease, has the nature to pass away, has the nature to disappear. So it happens. That's all. So then you are not disturbed very much. So your mind becomes more and more calm, relaxed, unattached. So that tendency within you, previously there was a tendency for you to react in a certain manner to a lustful thought. But now you are reversing that tendency. You are not reacting to a lustful thought. You are not getting deluded to a lustful thought. You are not getting entangled to a lustful thought. You are not attributing a person to a lustful thought. You are keeping a lustful thought mere to the lustful thought. So then it will mind its own business. So the tendency, the wrong tendency, the lustful tendency we had become diluted. Becomes less and less, and ultimately one day, so it may basically completely uprooted.
It's very clear about that.
Right.
Thank you very much. And I need to add one more thing to that.
Yeah.
So to stay and recognize that, okay, in your example, the lustful thought came. For that, actually, mindfulness is the what you call it's the skill that we try to develop through this all sorts of sitting and walking sessions, that we try to sharpen the mindfulness.
Correct. Correct.
And I experience that in some cases that if I lose the mindfulness, all sorts of those defilements creep through slowly. Even I can't notice, because the reason why I can't notice this, because I have more mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
Mindfulness has been weakened.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's going through and then destroy the whole, that stillness, I used to call it, like my peaceful state,
mm-hmm.
is destroyed, and then tangled with all sorts of thereafter series of, it's like a, you know, heavy, after a heavy rain, huge, you know, in a stream, the stream was very quiet, but a heavy rain, and then all the water comes and, you know, flooding the whole area, because the mindfulness was not there, and I didn't close the gate for the water.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, you know, I couldn't recognize that there's a water coming. If it's a water coming, then I know what I should do. I should do is to stay and then watch how the water goes off.
Mm-hmm.
And once all the water goes off, it again comes to still water.
Mm-hmm.
So. That actually is the very key ingredient that I feel like being mindfulness. And for that, to be mindfulness, you have to practice mindfulness.
Yeah, correct.
And thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. So you have to be mindful, as well as you have to distinctly recognize each and every thought. So that is, that distinct recognition is what we call as the sampajanya, the clear comprehension. So you can clearly comprehend what's really going on. You are fully aware. You can penetrate each and every thought, each and every defilement, rather than you get defiled or you get ignorantly attached to it. Rather, you are maintaining that sort of clarity of the mind, the proper precise recognition onto each and every thought. So that capacity is now available in the mind. So one can sort of in a relaxed manner, one can now continue that practice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Pante. It's
yeah.
Very clear.
Okay. Okay.
Great. Bhante, a quick question from chat. Can we please have the reference for the Vajra Sutta and the Vatagupta Sutta?
Right, right. So, the other, I'll try to find it. You continue in the, we'll continue in the other things.
Okay. We'll move on to the next question from Geshan. Feel free to unmute.
Dhruvatsaranai Bhante, I hope you can hear.
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Very good. I had three questions, but I'll try to sort of phrase it as much as possible in a quick manner. I think based on today's discussion, you were talking about the questions was basically labeling, and those labels, I am sure you were talking about, you know, these type of nama as such that I can, the way that I picture, and I think it's a series of questions you stated where the Rahat asked from another Sangha, I can't remember the name, of course. Am I to sort of believe that this is the Nama Rupa Parichede that you were talking about, or is that something, the labeling itself is something to do with the Nama?
Yeah, the labeling is one, in a way, we can say one capacity the Nama are having. So actually they work together. Now that is where the Sampassa is coming to the picture, Patika Sampassa, Adivachana Sampassa. Buddha explains you need certain ways of representation. Akara, Linga, Nimitta, Uddesa. So different forms, different genders, or certain signs, certain topics, words. So many different ways of representations are necessary to describe a certain entity. So we call it as an entity, rather than even ongoing entity, we call it as a permanent entity, and we are using certain terminology, taking extracted from that very entity to represent it, to distinctly recognize it. And it is common to forms, and it is common to non-forms, or to the material aggregates as well as to the immaterial aggregates. So these terminologies are mere terminologies. So that's the problem. So we slowly give value to those terminologies. We become adhered to those terminologies. We strongly start believing those terminologies, and we start strongly believing what is representing by those terminologies are really existing. That's the problem. Now say, for example, when I am giving a name as car to a assembled components, now rather than thinking that it is an assembled, I mean it has thousands and thousands of little components coming together, and we have given a name as car, so that very understanding become completely depleted, completely become hidden. And for me, now what is available is a car. So now my mind easily grasps this car. So this car is something. This car is something valuable. This car is something I want. This car is unique. This car is my car. This my car is better than your car. So this car becomes strongly adhered a unique entity, unique something in my mind. So that is, so slowly what happened is the term, the car, which is given name, a label attached to a assembled thousands of components, now has strongly put into my mind as something uniquely available, as substantial something, a unique thing. So I hope I tried to explain. You got something?
Yes, yeah. I got it.
Yeah.
I think it's, I am sort of, you know, the way I picture from different discussions as well, and when I was sort of listening to today's discussion, the same kind of concept, because the way I use nama, you of course didn't use that word, but for me to sort of get the right understanding, and I think in our lives, you know, we call mother the moment I say mother or amma, you know, like it gives me different type of my experience and brings that then to my sister or a brother of mine. It may be the same mother, but getting that same experience. But what I want to sort of bring that question for us to sort of, we as human beings, to understand this concept of nama rupa, and is that the fundamental layer of it? So we have given certain type of labels, and there is the bodily, the formation of it as well, and these are the two things that sort of comes and form in our mind. How this, the figure, the mother sort of creates, and the actions, what she had done for us versus my relation to my mother or, you know, somebody else, I guess. So that was the reason why I was sort of, I just want to make that clear distinguish. My second question, if I may, this is, of course, we didn't talk about today's discussion, but I think it's a mere definition of impermanent. In the olden days, that through different type of monks and nuns, different talks I have heard, when you sort of say impermanent, the way that we always sort of say, you know, when somebody is getting old, and you know, not a flower sort of die, or that is the old concept that I have sort of gained. But lately, with this type of different discussions, I am yet to sort of believe that that is the wrong way of understanding impermanence. Impermanent is the way I have understood now. That is the reason why I'm asking this question. I need a clarity whether my understanding is correct, or if I'm stating something incorrectly, please correct me wherever. So the way I understand, when I see a beautiful image, and that image sort of forms in my through the through my eye, I get this contact. But the next moment, I that person sort of moves away, and that or maybe the flower, the beautiful flower that I'm seeing, and so I turn, or it change its orientation or what and what not, and
Right. So interesting question. So I think as far as I can say, now impermanent is something common, a universal characteristic. So it is common to form aggregate, it is common to feeling aggregate, perceptions aggregate, formations aggregate, and to consciousness aggregate. Now if we refer only the forms aggregate, now you have taken the flower. Now,
yes.
If we consider this flower, so this flower belongs to form aggregate, we can say. So, that very thing has the nature to arise and pass away. So, it is also impermanent. And on the other hand, me, when I see a flower, so what I perceive as a flower, that comes as a, in a way to the perceptions aggregate. So, that perception aggregate also arising and pass away. It is also impermanent. And probably I may attribute a thought to this, as a result of seeing, I may get various thoughts regarding this flower. Those very thoughts are also arising and passing away. That is also those formations, also impermanent. And now suppose when I see this flower, I get a pleasurable feeling. This feeling also arising and passing away, that is also impermanent. And now when I am seeing this flower, so as a sense faculty, the eye faculty is involved, the mind faculty is involved, and they also arise and pass away, they are also impermanent. So likewise, so it is not mere, you know, logically that thinking, okay, this flower is there and it makes the contact in my mind, that is impermanent. This whole process is impermanent. All the constituent components, we would say, are all impermanent. It's a very universal characteristic, not only unique to our mind or mental phenomena, even to all the physical phenomena, it is a universal characteristic. And the other thing is, we don't need to narrow down impermanence only to a particular region, only to a particular area, because since it is a universal characteristic within your meditation, if you can understand this impermanence as a characteristic in any of these areas, that will improve your understanding. So that's why in Vipassana there is no any kind of say narrowed down area, okay, only to this aggregate you need to do the Vipassana, don't do the other aggregates. So there is no such kind of a restriction. So you are allowed to reflect, you are allowed to investigate any kind of an aggregate. You can do Kaya Anupassana, you can do Vedana Anupassana, you can do Chitta Anupassana, you can do Dhamma Anupassana, ultimately covering all five aggregates.
Yes, thank you for that clarification. I agree, and I just gave a simple example that I thought is easy insight in my mind. It goes, I get a series of thoughts, and these those thoughts sort of changes as well, and the mere change itself, I see the impermanency of it as well. That's how I kind of look at it as well. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I appreciate your time.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Darshika, feel free to ask your question.
Yes. Bhante, there was a night, can you hear me, Bhante?
Yes.
My question is, I want some advice. You said just in this today's talk that conceit, asmimane, is very difficult to deal with. Now, when I'm doing the meditation, seated or walking, I see these thoughts coming. Maybe the thoughts that worries me, and I distinctly recognize. advice and just watch, and it just comes and goes. And I see the process happening, but in daily life, I feel that I have this deeply rooted. So, what would your advice? How can I deal with it?
So, I mean, can you restate the last statement? Deeply rooted what?
The conceit. I.
Yeah. So that's why, I mean, so this I, mine, myself, so those are deeply rooted. So only
yes.
Remedy is to again and again see that, again and again notice that how I making happens. Now say for example, say you see your child, and now when you see that, you get a strong possessiveness into yourself. Oh, this is my child. Oh, this is my child. So this sense of mind, this possessiveness, this belongingness, so we need to slowly recognize within ourselves what it creates within me, what it feels like, so how it pops up a kind of strong sense of I. So we need to recognize it properly, and rather than now being stimulated by that, being agitated by that, now let me admit that and slowly keep it aside. So I admit, okay, that is sense of I don't need to promote it, I don't need to get deluded by that. So this is mere sense of I, okay, I'm just keeping it back. You're simply disclaiming it. You're not claiming it as a person, you are not going and immediately, you know, reacting to that. Rather you admit it, recognize it, slowly let it go. Slowly keeping it aside.
So that also you recognize as like a thought coming.
Yeah.
That I got mine.
Mm.
And then looking at it.
Yes.
And then it go without getting excited.
Yes. Actually, that even in the Kemaka Sutta, that Venerable Kemaka explains that. So that furthering your practice, further you understand the impermanent, suffering, non-self, all onto these five aggregates. So even that asmi mana, even that asmi the chanda, even that asmi the anusaya, that also slowly getting depleted, slowly getting abandoned. So the same process we need to continue. So it's a kind of a subtle defilements now one may come across, but the approach is the same. Yeah.
I'll get your advice on this with Bhante, because I was wondering whether I had to do anything else.
No, it's very
so just
kind of understand.
Just watch that as
yes.
well
yes.
as allowing to go.
Correct.
Rather than reacting to that.
Yes, I mean, you don't need to hate it either. So you don't need to
yes.
hate. Now, if you are hating it, then you are. It's very much like a self-hate. You
yes.
accept that is someone, or you accept something, and then you start hating it. It's rather because of the wrong sort of previous misunderstandings. Now these things are kind of happening, but now I am not promoting it. Now we simply allow it to pass away.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much, Bhante.
Okay.
It's very
okay.
clear.
Right.
Tell on Sanai.
Yeah, tell on Sanai.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Kumudini for the next question.
Bhante.
Yes.
There was my question came up after listening to all these discussions here.
Uh-huh.
Now, what I understand is that you are supposed to rejoice in something good that you have done and so on also. So all those things also you should just not cultivate it, or you just...
Yeah. Yeah, correct.
Those things also they must go by?
Yes. So that's why, I mean, so now that's what we need to distinctly understand. That is where Buddha mentioned two forms of samadhitti. Kammasakata samadhitti, or what we call as a mundane type of samadhitti. And the second one is called the supramundane type of samadhitti, lokuttara samadhitti. in the mundane type of samadhi, what you said is correct, where you rejoice as a person once you've done something good. Okay, I have done that, it was really done, I mean, I did it properly. So it's a kind of a cause of rejoice that you are promoting, and the sense of I is there, you are there, I am there, I am the one who did it properly. So the sense of I is there. So therefore Buddha mentioned it is tainted. Sasava, punya bhagya, upadivepaka. It is tainted, but it is producing a lot of wholesome consequences, wholesome results. But on the other hand, when you are dealing with the other side of samadhi, lokuttara supramundane type of samadhi, so that is where Buddha mentioned it is anasava. It is no with taints, it is not defiled with taints. Anasava, lokuttara, madganga, and it is supramundane, it has become a path factor and it is noble. So in this process, you are not promoting a sense of I. You are not promoting a self. So actually you need to, now whoever is listening to this discussion need to understand. So in order for us to practice in this supramundane type of samadhi, first of all we need to establish ourselves in the mundane type of samadhi. So we have to first become a good person, a sapurisa, and now this good person is now trying to further develop himself. Now he is thoroughing his understanding about the Dhamma. He is enhancing his knowledge. And he is understanding what are the other causes of suffering. What are the other causes of distress. And now he understands, okay, this I-making, mind-making creates kind of agitation in the mind. I-making, mind-making creates some sort of a glitch in the mind, oscillation in the mind. So let me keep it aside. So basically this I-making, mind-making is a cause of suffering. Now actually what Buddha mentioned is, in a way we can say, from suffering path, from large amount of suffering to less and less amount of suffering, and ultimately no suffering at all. So mentally there can't be any suffering. So you had kind of a suffering because you were creating so much of I, so much of me, so much of myself, so much of mine. Now you are less suffering because you are not creating it.
Thank you very much for explaining that, because until now I have been under the impression that we have, from listening to monks themselves, they have told to rejoice in what good you do and all that stuff. And today, after listening to the Dhamma talk, this question occurred to me. I'm glad you explained it. Thank you.
Yeah. So actually, this is very traditional thing. That rejoicing on one's good deeds. So that is Buddha recommended in one level. So nandati, abhinandati, so likewise. So when someone does something good, so Buddha also requests, okay, you be happy about it. You do a punyanumodana, so you rejoice even someone else's good. And one, you can rejoice on your own deeds. But how about not making yourself? How about not making an ego? How about not making a self out of anything? So that is actually, we can say, some another part of vipassana. So we can't say this is a beginner's practice. We can accommodate, we can allow everybody to do. But rather, when a vipassana yogi is slowly maturing his practice, so there he may understand, okay, now I don't need I to make based upon what I have done. There is no need of a second thought. There is no need of self-appropriation. There is no need of self-promotion. What is done is done.
Right.
Something like that. Yeah.
So this stage doesn't automatically come. You have to develop this stage also.
Actually, slowly you may, naturally also might come.
It is in a sense coming because, you know, when I recognize stuff, I am, you know, observing these things, and but I didn't understand it as well until you explained today. Thank you very much, Vante.
Okay. Yeah, that one's nice.
Thank you. Priya, feel free to ask the question.
Can you hear me, Vante?
Yes, yes.
Vante, I was, after I was listening to that question, I decided to ask this question. Sometimes I feel like, you know, without any reason, I feel joyful, happy inside. So when I keep on watching my mind as much as possible, like listening to the inner voice.
Mm-hmm.
And then without any voice or anything, sometimes, you know, you feel happy. And then I realize that it is also a permanent different change. But I was thinking, okay, should I try to just watch it and what happened to it? Or I was a little bit confused. What should I do when I feel like that? Sometimes it lasts for a long time, and I mean, not hours, but for several minutes. And sometimes it can be like 30 minutes or so, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if I just watch it and just be aware of it and see what happened, mm-hmm. Would it be all right?
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's a matter of simply being aware of it. So actually, when eye making, mind making does not happen, and again, when clinging does not happen, there could be subtle happiness available. And we don't need to attach to it, but we can be with it. Because, I mean, you know, so it's a matter of refining the mind. We were in a kind of a happiness, which is completely sensuality-based happiness, grasping-based happiness. But now one may be in a kind of a pleasant happiness, but it is a, you know, without grasping, without eye making, mind making, still mind is naturally in a kind of a happy mood. We typically say it's a more equanimous state. It may have a little, you know, that's why etang santang, etang panitang, yadidang upekha, sometimes Buddha mentioned. So that state, etang santang, so it is shantai, that is means it is peaceful. Etang panitang, it is sublime. Etan santang, etan panitang, yadidang upekka. And this is equanimity. So it is equanimous, peaceful, and sublime type of state of mind.
Okay. Yeah, my doubt was, is it really equanimous? That's why I like it. That's the that's the problem. I mean, there shouldn't be like or dislike. So sometimes I get attached to it, that's why I ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a matter of, you know, familiarizing with it and being with it, and we don't need to have kind of attachment to it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
And the other question I have is, you know, Bhante, even if we have this super mundane understanding to some extent, not completely, but in daily life, we have to go back and forth, according to the situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because recently, something that happened to me, I had a hard decision to take a person who is going to take a very responsible role in. It's like a very high position.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to evaluate that person.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew from my experience, I knew that the person is not suitable for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably others don't have the same experience, but for sure, I mean, there are two sides, bad, good and bad, but in super mundane level, we should not see wrong in others.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if I didn't tell the truth, I mean, even if I, it definitely going to disturb peace in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to, make turbulence in my mind. But mm-hmm. I was arguing, and then finally I decided that I had to tell the truth. I had to be truthful. I had to give the right information.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I did the right thing.
Yeah. So on such occasions, yes, as you say, it is not that we become completely not interested and allow the whole thing to collapse. That is one possibility. Now, if you think that there is no invitation to you to address your views, to present your views, and there is no place for you, and there is no contribution requested from you, then no point of disturbing the whole process and jumping to the situation and try to express. That is also not possible.
Yeah.
But you can be very aware that things can go wrong, but you are not invited to express. Then we have no business. We can allow things to collapse. But on the other hand, say you are a responsible party and your consent is also important and the others are expecting you to express your honest views. Then we can honestly explain what we feel or what we understand. That there is no harm in it. So we are working in that level, in the conventional level. So because we as a department, as an entity, as a monastery, as an organization, so we are working together as a group. So on such situation, okay, I have to work in the conventional level. It is admitted, it is understood.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that it's social responsibility.
Exactly.
Thank you very much, Bhante.
Bhante, are there any questions on your side? I think we are all done on our side.
Okay, there are no questions today from this side. So then we can wind up the session. So today also we have participated to the Sutta teaching session and we were able to explore certain suttas and try to understand Buddha's teaching, and all the merits that we have accumulated to this discussion, let us share with all the celestial beings, all the past away relatives and whoever in need of merits, and let's wish these merits help us also to further our practice, to deepen our practice and to realize path, fruition, nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Yattavata chamhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Yattavata chamhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Yattavata chamhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.